That's just a cool recording, man.
Yeah,
I can dig it.
Solid. Right on.
Brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know we've got to find a way to bring some loving here today. Yeah.
Good morning, and oh, that didn't sound right. Good morning, and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. Good morning to you, Calvin. How you doing, man?
I'm doing all right, Earl. How are you?
All right, man. You getting a hair, shaving a haircut and taking a bath and all those things?
Yeah, I you know, I might actually get my hair cut on Thursday. We'll see if I can get an appointment.
Well, it's been a long time.
It has been a while.
You're going to have to introduce yourself to the barbershop.
Anyway, man, that's, you know who that is by now. It's my co-host, Sandy Williams. Good morning to you, Sandy. How you doing, man?
Well, I'm doing all right. It's not a fit night out for man or beast out
No.
there. There was a movie. There was a guy named W.C. Fields who was.
I remember W.C. Fields.
Well, he preceded me, other than in the old movies that I used to watch. But there was a famous movie he made where he kept coming in from outside. The snow and rain would blow in behind him, and he'd say, "It's not a fit night out for man or beast."
You know, I'm almost ashamed to say I remember W.C. Fields.
Yeah.
You know, there's you know, he was a funny guy.
He was, and he made jokes. All the Eagles wouldn't like him. He made jokes all the time about how awful Philadelphia was, and he had on his tombstone, "Personally, I'd rather be in Philadelphia." That was his epitaph.
He was a guy. He had big nose. It was always
drinking.
Like his he's always a snootful.
Yep,
and you just think back to a guy like that, man. You know, he was one guy. He couldn't play anybody. It's probably who he was.
It's who he was. It's who he was. He made movies with Mae West.
Oh yeah.
And she was famous for her curves, let's put it that way. She was so famous for her curves that life preservers the inflatable life preservers you put on that would create curves where otherwise they wouldn't be, were called Mae Wests. They were named in World War II. They were named after her because of, well, her fulsomeness.
So Sandy always brings these pearls of wisdom. So always make sure you have a pen and some paper.
Yeah, there'll be a test on this. What and who is a Mae West?
You know. Anyway, Sandy, it's. Yeah, you know, it's going to be almost 40 degrees for the next 4 or 5 days.
Yeah, it's going to be a mess is what it's going to be.
Yeah, well, bring the mess on. It's time for some of this, you know. Hey, if you look at what's happening weather-wise in the nation, they said by Friday it's going to be 60 degrees in New York. They've got all kind of snow and ice all over the place. Certainly 60 degrees. I mean, it's really strange that San Diego flooded, right?
I mean, the weather patterns, and, you know, there are those who say that, you know, in fact, I think the guest we're going to have on Friday, Senator Johnson, was being questioned about the climate change, and he said, well, it's good for Wisconsin because we're going to turn into something more like North Carolina, be a nice, warmer climate. Well, you know, that disregards what it does to the ecosystem because we've lost almost all of certain kind of pine trees in Wisconsin. And the reason we've lost them is that there's a scourge available to kill those pine trees only if the weather doesn't get cold enough in the winter. And so it's been the more mild winters that have introduced a lot of ecosystem problems and also pathogens. I mean, they're worried now about the extent to which viruses will mutate and be different, and we will face a whole different set of pathogens, both for mankind and for plants and animals. So we've got, you know, there's going to be a big evolution that's the result of this. And the other thing that's going to result from it is migration and human migration. So,
well, you know, Sandy, it's not a good thing when, you know, the ecosystem, the way it's situated, the pine trees have a purpose. Everything
was, there was a balance that the ecosystems had achieved, and that balance is now seriously being changed, and we'll see what we think of it. But in the midst of the change is the difficult time. I mean, I suppose when you reach the next equilibrium, whatever that is, but if the temperature keeps getting warmer, we never get to equilibrium. We keep chasing it. And so that's a problem. You know, those of us who love hockey rinks are unhappy. Hey,
well, you know, Sandy, here's the violin.
About the hockey rink?
Yeah.
Yeah, well.
Well, it's not that it hasn't been cold enough. What it is, you know, it all came at once, right?
I mean, first it wasn't cold. It wasn't cold. Then it was way cold. It was, you know, so yeah, it's just, I think we don't have to dwell too long on it, but I do think that the climate and the climate change, people can argue the extent to which it's man-driven, but climate change is going to create a lot of turmoil in our lives, and we can look for the silver lining and say, yeah, it'll be great to live in something that's like North Carolina or hopefully not Florida here in Wisconsin.
Wait.
But it's going to be tumultuous.
But you know, Sandy, Joe Biden has set aside billions and billions of dollars to deal with the climate. That's one of the things that he has really attempted to address.
Well, and the people who are in favor of ignoring it have simply that what they propose to do is stick their head in the sand and deny the existence of climate change or to deny the importance of it. And at least to deny the notion that we ought to prepare for it with funding and programs. Because if you start talking about putting in funding and programs, people will start doing a cost-benefit analysis. You know, should we be spending all this money to deal with it, or should we be spending some more money to defer it, to put it off, to limit its effect? And so I think that's the reason why those people who are vested in an economy which ignores climate change don't want to deal with, for instance, funding the programs necessary to deal with it.
Well, you know, Sandy, you live on a river in the back of your home, and you've got a nature preserve back there. You can see things, right?
Yeah.
You can notice things over the difference in the animals and all those kind of things.
Well,
something
is going on, and it's going to be more pervasive than that. The probably the more troublesome changes won't be the big mammals that we can see. It's going to be the insects and the small nematodes and things that relate to what kind of vegetation thrives and what kind of vegetation doesn't work. And then that vegetation change in the long run will change everything else.
Well, you know, the balance of all of this is so delicate. You watch the ice caps melting. You know, it was warmer in Alaska the other day than it was in Milwaukee. I mean, in the dead of winter, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's endemic everywhere, the changes. But I mean, it's most remarkable, I guess, at the poles, and particularly in the North Pole, the Arctic region, where the warming is very significant and where the rate of warming is actually greater. Being experienced there is greater than the rate of warming that we're experiencing. And there the ecosystem is very fragile based on the frozen situation, having a broad ice cap. And we've got problems in the tundra, in the Russian tundra, where a great deal of methane is captured in the peat bogs and the tundra there, and it's being released because of the thaw, right? They have permafrost there until, oh, wait, they don't. You know, the permafrost is lifting, and as it lifts, there's a great deal of change there, including the release of microscopic viral particles, as well as a lot of methane.
Yeah, you know, Sandy, even in Central America and places where it's really warm, the things that are happening there as well that are causing people to be concerned.
Yeah, people, the geographers and the people who are geoclimate kind of experts predict very accurately, I think, that there will be a great deal of need for human migration that will be caused by the results of this climate change. There'll be dry areas that are no longer sustain crops, so that famine will drive people to move. There will be uninhabitably hot regions where people will want to move from them. And so we worry about our southern border today, but I mean, all of the world is going to have to deal with the mass migration of human beings, which will be accelerated. Right now, it's being accelerated by two forces. And a primary force now is social conditions, warfare and political, geopolitical social conditions that drive people to move, as well as extreme poverty. But we're beginning to see movement as the result of climate results.
So, Sandy, when we come back from our little, short break, I want to talk a little bit. I was looking at some statistics about immigration, and we keep saying that Joe Biden is the cause of immigration. And if you look at how far back, the last time, Sandy, there was a reform bill passed for immigration was 1986 in Ronald Reagan. This is not anything new, right? It doesn't matter how many times they keep yelling and hollering and saying Joe Biden did this.
Well, no, and in fact, the thing that the Trump administration did was the Title 42-based limitation, okay, which was based on the COVID disease emergency, which allowed the president to, on an emergent basis, essentially freeze the movement of asylum seekers into the United States and to put a freeze on immigration in a way that wasn't otherwise to be sustained by the laws, okay? So Congress can point at what Trump did, but they can't really say that the president should be entitled to reinstate that freeze, because the same people who want that freeze to be reinstated are against unilateral presidential powers. They're against the power of the deep state, essentially, to implement regulations without legislation.
844-967-2789. You're tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host, Sandy Williams, the walking encyclopedia.
Oh, wow. Encyclopedias are passé.
Sleepy, dusty Delta day. I was out chopping cotton and my brother was baling hay. And at dinner time we stopped and walked back to the house to eat. And Mama hollered at the back door, y'all remember to wipe your feet. She said, I got some news this morning from Choctaw Ridge. Today, Billy Joe McAllister jumped off the Tallahatchie Bridge.
Hey, Papa, that's a blast from the past. Right?
That is. She didn't have many hits, but this was a good one.
It was a great song. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. So Sandy, before we went to break, I was talking about the fact that there hasn't been any legislation from Democrats and Republicans dealing with immigration since 1986.
Yeah.
So this has been festering.
38 years. And, the problem is that what Trump did was by presidential fiat. It was a fiat that was supported by the emergency of the COVID situation. COVID is no longer there to lean on. And so what's really needed is legislation, because the conservatives who are most wanting something to be done at the border are against unilateral powers by agencies or presidents to, you know, just do it. They need legislatives. They need language to point at. And, you know, Neil Gorsuch and some of the conservatives on the Supreme Court are actively trying to limit what they call the administrative state, which is the discretion of individuals and government to fill in the gaps, to fill in the spaces left by vague legislation unilaterally essentially implement policy. And so, you know, the president can't do it. And what's needed is legislative language to be the support for what it is that needs to happen at the border. And so Congress needs to just get busy. They need to start working on bipartisan solutions. And there are those in Congress who don't want bipartisan solutions. I think one of the people who announced that they didn't want that we'll be talking to shortly.
Well, you know, Sandy, just to give people a truth, some truth serum, they don't have to take our words for it. Look it up. So no matter how many times you hear people say this is Joe Biden's issue at the border, it's just not true.
Well, you know, the notion is that Joe Biden has opened the border up. And what Joe Biden has done is return to the asylum procedures that existed before the presidential executive order of Trump. I think at least that that's what's happened. Unfortunately, there's an awful lot of arm waving and talking about the border without a lot of detailed discussion about exactly what the fine print would tell us about what the policy options are at the border and what policy options are being pursued now and what policy options were pursued in the past. What we do know about Trump was the Title 42 order that was premised on COVID that put great restrictions on the influx, the process of seeking asylum in this country. But the numbers of people seeking asylum has gone way up. And that's not something that the president has direct control over. That's more the result of world affairs and at least Western hemispheric affairs.
So unless the Senate is doing all it can to try to come to some kind of place where there can be some dialogue and some action, but the House, that is controlled by Republicans, clearly does not want there to be, you know, this time where we can at least say, hey.
Well, I think the Senate maybe has. I think that the Senate adjourned. I think that our guest on Friday had some comments about himself being in some respects responsible for the Senate adjourning without a bipartisan solution at the Senate level. We can ask him about that. I think his statements at the time were that he didn't think the Democrats were reasonable or interested in a solution, and so he wasn't interested in a bipartisan negotiation about it. But whatever is going on, we end up with loggerheads for decades and essentially paralysis for decades dealing with the fundamental issues. How many do we want? How many people do we want coming in? How do we select how they come in? How do we staff and man the processes for that whole process? And we've understaffed the process for dealing with immigration, and we've not come to direct we haven't reached bipartisan consent on the first two questions.
So, Sandy, I don't think the answer can be, well, the government is broken, so we can't get things done. That's, to me, is unacceptable response. So why is government broken? Because of the people who are running government.
Yeah. I think the answer is, the reason is government is broken, but why is government broken is the right question. You know, the lamp is on the floor, it's in pieces. How did it break? You know, that's more the question. Why is it broken? And I think we've been thrashing around with that issue, you and I and others, for years, trying to kind of figure out how it is we can break the the partisan impasse and create some mechanism for actually accomplishing a broad range of things. You know, we can list on one hand the bipartisan things that have happened, one of them being the infrastructure bill, which, of course, in many respects is a very politically attractive thing to pass for both sides because it's an immense amount of pork.
Well, you know, you added that caveat at the end. Pork.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's hard for the everyday citizen to see any of those things. All they show us is a bunch of people gathering, coming from different places, trying to get into our nation. And we don't know anything about why the backlog is there. All we can go by is what we hear people say, unless we do a little research on our own. And then you come up with, hey, there hasn't been a bill passed since 1986. Well, Sandy, it's not going to get any better without the legislation. The only way it can be fixed is through that, right?
Yeah, and also just a general discussion, a national discussion about immigration, and a truthful one, factually based about where people are coming from, what our country most would need and want in the way of immigration. The country has a vested interest in having immigration. It isn't just a philanthropic notion that America's shores are open to the poor and desperate because we want to be the good, do goodwill in the world. Yes, that's what we say, and that's how probably we should be thinking. But the fact is we have a vested interest in having lots of immigrants coming into this country.
844-967-2789 is the number.
Bobby Joe Gentry.
Yep.
And me, I spend a lot of time picking flowers up on Choctaw Ridge and drop them into the muddy water off the Tallahatchie Bridge.
Join us at 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host Sandy Williams. And Sandy, so as the voters are in the booths as we speak in New Hampshire, people are in those booths for different reasons. You and I were talking during the break about, and it's a good question, you know, what makes people vote?
Yeah, I mean, my question for people is, what is the number one issue in your mind about a candidate? What is it that you want, that you are hoping that candidate will accomplish? The number one thing, not numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, but the number one thing, the most important thing in your mind that you want your candidate that you're going to vote for to accomplish on a national basis. And to me, that's a very interesting question. It varies, I'm sure, from person to person based on their circumstance. But from my circumstance, I think the most important issue is what will that person do for the benefits, the problem that middle-class America, the median family in America faces with respect to their budget. And that budget problem, in my book, when I analyze it, is entirely dependent upon the kind of benefits they're realizing and having to now pay for from the standpoint of child daycare, health care costs, education costs, and retirement, okay? And so those four things have a great deal of traction and importance to middle America. And if we don't solve those problems, and if middle America continues to live paycheck to paycheck, and if middle class in America continues to mean financial stress frustration, then we have a failing geopolitical system. And I think it's vital, vital that we solve those problems so that we can save the free market system we have here in America that is important to us all.
You know, Sandy, whoever that person is he can't unilaterally fix those things, because you're going to hear that, you know, there are limited resources in our nation, and where they're, you know, going to be spent sometimes is at the root of why we can't fix those things you're talking about.
Well, that's why I want to hear what people's number one issue is, because if we can come up with a prioritization of them, we could start analyzing the federal budget with those priorities in mind to figure out where and how we ought to be spending the money we ought to be spending, and how much money we ought to ask for from ourselves, how much should we be taxing ourselves to accomplish these outcomes. And so, you know, I think it's a fundamentally interesting question. We have an election year, and I think everyone ought to be thinking about this. And instead of the arm waving we do about a whole bunch of issues, I'm interested in people's number one issue. And then when we get done with number two, well, number one, we can start asking people what their number two issue is. But I think number one is a pretty important thing. And when people go to into the polling booth, I suspect that whether they're honest with themselves or not, they do have a number one issue in mind.
You know, I think, Sandy, that, you know, if you ask me that and I have to, and you have to think on it instead of just responding, I think the answers, you know, are going to be a little more concrete if you don't just snap it off. You know, well, this is why I'm going, well, you know, I think it should be this. And you think on it and realize that these things certainly matter when you're making this decision. Let's go to the phone lines. Let's go to Cindy from Appleton. Hey, good morning to you, Cindy. Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
Well, good morning. I used to feel a little differently, but after the president before this one, I have kind of changed my values, opinions, views, or whatever, because at this point, what I want is a president who is not going to be an embarrassment to this country and who believes in maintaining democracy. Those are two of my big issues right now.
Sandy, you want to respond?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think that when we, and I think I think Cindy's got a point that who you elect, because there's so many things that will come up that are not foreseeable, it's very important that we, and one of the most important things I think we're thinking about when we elect somebody is, what is this person likely to do in the circumstances that I can't predict? You know, is this someone who's got the same stripes that I've got? Okay. And so I do think that's very important to lots of people, but unfortunately, if that's all we think about and we don't think concretely about some particular issues, it's probably less likely that those issues will get accomplished.
Cindy?
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I missed what you said about, did you ask me a question?
No, okay.
No.
Yeah, Cindy, thank you very much for the call. Really appreciate it. Let's go to Stephen from Green Bay. Good morning to you, Stephen. You say what?
Good morning, Earl, and good morning, Sandy. It's great hearing from you on a Tuesday, as always. First, I'm going to give Kelvin a little flack, a little guff, if you will. I think what you meant to say when you answered my phone call was,
Okay, so that's okay. Go ahead, man.
Anyways, so this is my number one issue, and I'm kind of glad that Sandy is asking this question. My number one issue would be gun control. Guns are the number one killer in schools now. They've surpassed everything else, and that's obviously an issue. So I'll leave it at that.
There, I mean, that's important.
Yeah.
You know, I think that that's exactly what I'm looking for, is for people to address to think about and address what they think they want most to be accomplished by whomever it is they elect. And gun control would obviously, and sociologically, it would have a big impact probably in our country. Both the movement to get gun control, which would require a very charismatic and cohesive kind of a discussion to get from here to there. So, you know, I think that's very interesting.
You know, Sandy, it doesn't matter what the issue that people will bring up. It's whether or not these are things that we can get our government to agree on.
Well, we can get our government to agree on anything that 100% of the people would think was an important issue, right? So,
right.
So we aren't ever going to get to 100%, but can we ever get enough cohesive thinking amongst a large enough body of in the geopolitical body of America so that we can get from here to there? Because, you know, quite frankly, nobody thought we could do the health care, and Barack Obama got, you know, he didn't go 100 yards on it because of all the opposition and all the compromise that had to occur. But, you know, his ability to get the pre-existing condition standard imposed on insurance so that everyone with a pre-existing condition was not going to be left out in the cold was very fundamentally important. And he also, I think, thereby created the notion that healthcare is a right, okay, and not just a privilege.
You know, Sandy, before we go back to the phone lines, if you just look at the composition of the Republican Party back then and the composition of it today, I don't know if that was happening today, he would have been able to even make that work. I mean, there were John McCain's and others.
Well, in fact, the Republicans orchestrated a whole Obamacare kind of a counter revolution against it. You know, they used Obamacare. First of all, they named it that, and
right.
Then they used it against the Democrats and against Obama to organize themselves by creating a fictional horror of about Obamacare, right?
They're going to determine who dies, right?
Yeah, the death committee, and the nonsense that was used about it, you know, and it's a bit like Roe v. Wade. It's fun to attack it, but to actually accomplish the rescission of Obamacare was something the Republicans knew would be a political third rail. They didn't really want to dismantle it. They just wanted to talk about it. Okay. But I think the reason we have so much of this kind of political third rail talking without action kind of a thing is that we're busy stirring people up without accomplishing things. Politically, what's happened is the parties have decided it's really attractive to stir people up, draw them to us like a moth to a flame, but we're not going to actually accomplish anything other than to sustain power. And so, you know, what we need to do as people is we need to start fundamentally thinking much more concretely than our politicians are thinking. And we need to start thinking about what's most important to us, and let's get that accomplished.
Let's go to Tom from L.A. Good morning to you, Tom. Your thoughts?
Well, first off, we the people ultimately are the government, so we must never forget that. So therefore, I guess democracy would be one of the things that would be the top of my list. But the top of my list, as you all know, money. Is to get money out of politics, to get people that are politicians to start saying we need to get money out. We need to get lobbyists out, including, I'll throw a bone to the right side, even with teachers unions, get that lobbyist out, get all lobbyists out, and return and restore government back to we the people. And one other thing, just be messaging matters. So I love what Steven said about guns, but it's got to be, you know, put in a way that's gun safety, not gun control, because nobody wants to be controlled. And that's part of the issue, I think, with that issue, is that we're talking about gun safety. We're talking about when I went to hunter safety, I didn't go to hunter's control, I went to hunter safety. But my number one issue is get money out of politics, and for everyone to realize that they're all being had by a system where basically we the people are not running this government. And when we go out and we march in the streets, it doesn't matter. because all that matters is the money that they're going to get from the donors and get bribed and be owned by the corporations and the billionaire class that keep on trying to divide us among social issues, so therefore they can keep on getting their tax breaks.
Hey, Tom, thank you very much for the call. 844-967-2789. Sandy, you want to respond?
Well, yeah, just I would certainly agree that money out of politics is a fundamentally important thing, because money has allowed politicians to hide in the dark, in a cloud. The money is behind, is handed to them without a great deal of public attention. And then their attentions are diverted from my number one goal, or Stephen's number one goal, or Tom's number one goal. And I would say that if we could all focus on that number one goal and drive our politicians to pay attention to it, maybe they could turn their back on money. To get money out of politics is probably going to require a Supreme Court change, not a or a constitutional change, both of which are very difficult, okay? The Supreme Court change could occur, but it'll be a while before the court majority changes. So in the meantime, I'd like to see us focus on issues and hold our politicians' feet to the fire, so that in spite of the money in politics, they will pay attention to the things that matter to Tom, Dick, and Mary.
You know, Tom, Dick, and Mary have to realize what is going on. I mean, really, that why they're in the condition that they're in.
Yes,
right?
Absolutely. And the problem is that when you're in that condition, when you're having trouble and you're living paycheck to paycheck, a part of you feels guilty about the fact that you haven't been able to manage money in a manner that works better than it is. Everyone feels like they're stretching themselves too thin, and they fail to realize they're in it in a big boat with a lot of people.
844-967-2789. You're tuning into the Earl Ingram Show. My co-host is Sandy Williams. 844-967-2789. You can join us.
You know that I would be a liar if I was to say to you, girl, we couldn't get much higher. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night on fire. The time to hesitate is through. No time to wallow in the mire. Try now, we can only lose. And our love become a funeral pyre. Come on, baby, light my fire. Come on, baby, light my fire. Try to set the night on fire.
All right, welcome back. The Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host, Sandy Williams. Let's go to the phone line. Susan from Kenosha. Good morning to you, Susan. Your thoughts?
My thoughts. Well, you know I read a lot, for one thing. And I recently am reading a book called Requiem for Marx. And this deals with the Communist Party and how they control their citizens. And what the people in the United States should do is realize that we are being controlled. We are being controlled with the amount of money that we make. They've taken a big deal of the big people who have the money, have taken a big deal of our manufacturing out of our country. They're telling us how to educate our children, and they are making it more and more difficult for us to survive. And what we need to do, and all get together as a unit and vote people into office who actually have our regards, what we feel that's important. And one by one, we'll take care of gun control. We'll take care of abortion rights, and we'll take care of our medical system, the way that we treat people, the way we educate people. But right now, what we have is a system where we have people who are rich and who control everything. That's the upper 10%. And then the rest of us are in the downswing of actually getting poor because we're living from paycheck to paycheck. And you can also look at it, how they are developing our food sources. The little farms that were controlled by the families are now being eaten up by these big conglomerates. And our type of food that we're eating is less nutritious than it was years ago. So this is a control thing. And until the American people really realize what's going on and take a stand and say, I've had enough, that is when the rest of this stuff will change.
Hey, Susan, thank you very much for that. I think you're right on point. You know, Sandy, if the only answer to any of it in a democracy is elections. And so people, that's the only place that we have the power. And people have to be educated on who they're voting for, right? I mean, I don't care if it's the legislature. I don't care if it's your alderman, your county supervisor, whoever the people are that you vote for, you better make doggone sure who they are, right?
Absolutely. I mean, that's why I brought the subject up. I think that what we need to do is start being honest with ourselves, doing a self-evaluation. What is it that is important to me personally about what government can and should be doing that will make life better and will bring America closer to its full potential and will avoid jeopardizing what it is that's great about America by, for instance, in my book, having a middle class that's shrinking and not thriving. You know, we need a thriving middle class, and we need to make sure that our politicians are responsive to the needs of those people. Okay, and Tom is right. Money is clouding the whole thing and making it much harder for the people to exercise their power. But we definitely need the people to exercise their power. And therefore, you know, elections shouldn't be popularity contests. They need to be contests associated with the policies being proposed by the people. And we need far more discussion of policy. And the policies we need to discuss should not be the powder keg tinderbox hot button policies that are related to the social issues. They need to be the issues that are fundamentally important to Tom, Dick, and Mary.
You know, Sandy, the frustrations that I have is the fact that I think people just they feel like this is more than what the lift is heavier than what they can do. They don't look at it as if myself as an individual, I can change it. They can't see that. They see, you know, that as an individual, hey man, what can I do? And they don't see that each one of them collectively can do something. But that's why 50% of the Americans say, forget that. I'm not engaged in that. That's not going to change my life.
Forget that. Frustration is all
right.
Is part of the sort of divide and conquer, right? If you frustration, futility, the futility that's created by gerrymandered voting districts, right?
Right.
If you represent 30% of the probable vote in your district, you're much less likely to go and vote because who cares? You know, your candidate, if everyone votes, is going to win 70-30 or is going to lose 70-30. And frustration about the outcomes from what happens in an election and the failure to deliver on issues is another reason for frustrated, maybe non-voting or voting on issues that are totally unrelated to your personal interest. Okay.
You know, Sandy, if I tell you how many times I've had conversations with people who say, I'm done with that voting stuff. I vote and nothing ever changes in my life. 50% of the Americans say that. Right? So So the way the system is set up, they feel like it's not in their favor.
I think it's because politicians don't talk about concrete things. They don't talk about specific programs that they're going to that will have an impact on us when we vote. And so we've come to now vote for our personalities.
844-967-2789. It's Tuesday. That means Tuesdays with my co-host Sandy Williams.